thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Il Camille and Fritzois, Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Tonic Lounge in Portland. From Los Angeles, MC Il Camille's divine mission is to uplift the world through Heirloom, her latest record. Fritzois' latest, the self-written and produced Avenue A, is filled with a soul-drenched sound that doesn't quite sit in a neat box of influences. The night also includes DJ sets by DJ Black Daria and DJ Shishi of Everyday Mixtapes. This is a 21 and over event. Again, that's Il Camille and Fritzois, Saturday, February 24th from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Tonic Lounge, 3100 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Do you have questions about KBOO's Kickstarter campaign? What's a Kickstarter, you ask? We are doing this campaign instead of a membership drive. It's an all-or-nothing campaign, which means if we don't raise the full $20,000 by March 9th, we have to send the donations back. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter to donate. We will be having a live interactive video on Wednesday, February 21st at high noon, so check us out and get all your questions answered at kboo.fm/Kickstarter.
Where the trees have leaves of prisms, break the line in colors.
KBOO Radio builds media makers. We believe strong, resilient communities must know how to make their own media. For the last 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of people how to produce compelling radio. We know that with our expertise and your support, we can keep this city activated and aware through radio. Invest in Portland's future media makers and join KBOO on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Radioland. I am Eldridge Cleaver, the former Minister of Information of the Black Panther Party. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial, community radio. I want you to listen to and support KBOO because Portland needs it, you need it, and the world needs it. Ubalagani, boing, boing.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO.FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 Hood River, 104.3, and KBOO.FM over the World Wide Web. This is More Talk Radio. Today is Monday, February 19th, 2018. I am Cecil Prescott, and I am really pleased to have you join us on this federal holiday. So there's no postal service. So is there email? I don't know. And then if you were listening, you just heard that KBOO promotion by Eldridge Cleaver, and I'd say, oh my gosh, do we have voices from the dead coming? But that may not be the case. But I thought that was interesting. I was spooked for a moment. Joining us this morning is a person who I am excited to speak with. David Walker is, some of us consider David Walker a jewel in our community that is a wealth of information and all sorts of things. So we're really excited to have David with us. He's writer, filmmaker, knowledgeable about popular culture, had a popular blog. I'm Badass Mofo. It's a resource guide to all sorts of things. David actually just got in from L.A. early this morning, so we're really excited to have him.
We're impressed.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Okay, even in this early in the morning after that long trip, you're still a badass.
Yeah, but I'm exhausted.
You can be exhausted, but that doesn't take away your badassness.
It was so beautiful in L.A., and then I get out, and I had to get my car out from under all this ice and whatnot at 3 a.m. It was not pleasant, but I survived. So, you know.
Hey, well, the sunshine of your smile.
Welcome.
So I'm sure there's maybe 2 or 3 people who have no clue about what you've been doing here in the Portland metropolitan area. So tell us, there might be 3, but I think it's only 2. But could you tell us a little bit about who you are and then what you are to Portland and possibly the nation's longest running African film festival?
Well, that's such a, now you're asking me to just brag, I think.
This is your legitimate opportunity.
Okay, well, I'm a long-time Portland resident, and when I say long-time, I'm talking long-time. I've been here longer than Starbucks, and went to high school here in Portland, and have just been one of those people who's just sort of floated around a lot, done a lot of things. I worked for Willamette Week for many, many years, as a film critic and as a staff writer and as an editor. While I was working there, I also ran a film festival for them, the Long Bao Film Festival, which was an independent film festival. Did that for about 5-6 years, I think. But it's also just been very actively involved in aspects of the film community, the arts community, and also the comic book community, because I sort of gave up a lot of stuff to pursue my childhood dream of working in the comic book industry, which is what I do now. That's my primary job, but I also run the Portland Black Film Festival in conjunction with the Hollywood Theater. This is our 5th year doing that, and the first year that we have teamed up with the Cascade Festival of African Film, which is, that's the longest running, I believe you were alluding to, the longest running African film festival in the United States, and I've been a fan of that festival for decades now, and the opportunity came up earlier this month for our festivals to combine and do a program together, which I was really happy to do.
I don't know how I've missed you. Some years ago, I sat on the board of Portland Cable Access. That's what it was called then. And a friend of mine, Veronica Hunter, who's since married and left for D.C., we used to do a film festival called Shadows of Sundance over at the Hollywood Film Festival. And I am so sorry that our paths did not converge before then. So I guess I have to make amends now. but first, thank you for your work, because it's necessary. And any particular or peculiar challenges that you have observed while being involved in the arts and media here in Portland?
Well, I think the challenges that I face or that are faced are the same ones that are faced everywhere, no matter what city you're in, is at least here in the U.S. and probably all over the world. And a lot of that just has to do with the combination of finding the funds to operate, to make whatever it is you're working on possible, getting the word out. You know, a city like Portland, what a lot of people don't realize is Portland is just one of the most film-friendly cities you're ever going to go to. You know, we're one of the last cities in the United States that still has operating video stores.
Yep.
You know, there's probably a different film festival, minimum of a different film festival every month here in town. This month alone, not just is there the Black Film Festival, there's the Cascade Festival of African Film, mm-hmm. and then the Northwest Film Center's Portland International Film Festival.
Yep.
That's just 1 month, right? And it's just interesting because, you know, in a day and age where there's so many things fighting for your attention and so many options in terms of just even what's on the internet, we still have a lot of great things in the city that you could actually leave your house to go do. And maybe Portland isn't always, you know, parking's getting worse and the weather's... This time of year, the weather isn't the best, but there's always a reason to go out. And I'm right now. I'm talking specifically about film. I should be very clear about that. That's not even throwing in music or other forms of art. You know what's going on at museums and galleries and just
Definitely. For example, the Real Music Festival. Used to also work as an intern at the Northwest Film and Video Center. So you've got the Real Music Festival that marries the two.
Yeah. There's so much incredible stuff going on, and I think that a lot of it is just keeping that in mind and knowing how to search for it. Right. You know, we've got KABU, which is a great resource. It used to be that there was, you know, there were like newspapers in this town, and they were, you know, we still have them, but they don't seem to carry the amount of sway that they used to have. You know, that's especially true with the Oregonian, which is just a shadow of what it used to be. And so how do you discover what's out there? How do you discover the great programs, whether it's music or film or gallery showing or what's at the museum? And you know, it can't all be on Facebook. It can't all be on Twitter. You know, there has to be other ways to get out to people and let them know what's happening. And I just, you know, I guess for better or worse, I've been around long enough that I know a couple people in this town and sort of also understand some of the dynamics of how we get the word out and how that has changed over the years.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. It's Les and Cecil. We are speaking with David Walker, who is the curator of the Portland Black Film Festival, currently at the Hollywood Theater. David, tell us a little info about the origins of the film festival, what films are coming up, and some background information about this.
Yeah, the festival started, it actually goes back longer than the festival's been around, which is Dan Halstead, who works at the Hollywood. I'm not even sure of what his official title is these days, but Dan and I have been friends for years, and he kept saying, you know, you should do a Black Film Festival. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I know, I should, but I'm busy doing other things. Film festivals aren't exactly my cup of tea anymore. But every time we'd see each other, and I go to the Hollywood a lot. I mean, I practically live there. He would bring it up, and finally it was you know, I said, look, Dan, you know, if I were to do a festival again after having done one for so many years, it's like I really would just want to show films that I would want to show my friends and family. I'd want to treat the festival almost like it's an offshoot of my living room, and just show films that I feel that they speak to the Black experience in one capacity or another, but they don't necessarily speak exclusively to the Black experience, because I think that's a mistake we often make, is thinking that that the Black experience in America can be addressed in a single film by a single filmmaker or encapsulated in a single song without really truly addressing the complexity of who we are and that our experiences are as unique as we are as individuals. Anyway, that was a digression. So finally one day I said, okay, Dan, you know, let's do this. So we just sort of decided, you know, we're going to pull together some films that he wanted to see and that I wanted to see. And we just tried to have as much fun with it as possible. Running, you know, Celeste, you know this, having run a film festival, it's a lot of hard work.
Oh, my goodness. Well, see, you have the advantage of the digital film era.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no. But I was doing it. I've been doing it long enough that I remember what it was like before digital.
Oh, yes.
Let me tell you.
Oh,
it
yes.
It hasn't gotten that much easier. There's still, like, you know, filmmakers still don't want to send you their work, and they're like, oh, load it off of YouTube. And you're trying to tell them that the picture quality won't
yes.
be that good.
Yes.
Whatever, you know.
Is that the way you wish to be, you know, seen? You want to be seen as an auteur or an amateur? I mean, which one is it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, just in terms of, let's say, getting the word out to target audiences, what have you found to be successful way of getting the word out?
Well, if I'm going to be honest, and this is not pandering at all, the two most successful outlets at this point in my experience have been right here where we are right now is KBOO,
mm-hmm.
and the other is KOPB.
All right.
I will ask people after they come to an event, how did you find out about this? And inevitably, it's these two stations, more so than any of the print media in town. And then after that is either subscribers to the Hollywood, because they have a subscriber service, or you know they saw it posted somewhere on the internet. But head mm-hmm. and shoulders above everything else. Which is interesting because we talk about how, you know, the old media is dead and the old media outlets are dying and, you know, radio is dead and print journalism is dead. But again, like I said, it's been my experience that a vast majority of the people who come and check out the festival either heard it live on the radio or they heard it later on a podcast off of, you know, a show that was recorded earlier. And so that's been the most successful thing. You know, the Scanner will write about us and the Observer has written about us in the past, Willamette Week, Mercury, all of them write us up. But I think that, for whatever reason, you know, this seems to be the best. And reaching people in Portland has never been, isn't always the easiest, especially if you're trying to get to a specific, you know, for lack of a better term, we'll say a specific demographic.
Right.
And we can leave that to mean whatever people want it to mean. I think in the case of, you know, what we're doing with the Portland Black Film Festival is like, we've all heard the jokes. You know, we've all heard that Portland's the whitest city in America, and, you know, where are the black folks at? And it's, you know, as much truth as there may be to some of those statements, it doesn't change the fact that we are out here and we do want to be entertained, we do want to engage, we do want to have community and just have moments where we can just sort of enjoy each other's vibe. And I've discovered with this festival how difficult it can be, especially reaching, like, also when I say young people, to me, anyone under the age of 45 is young, but I'm speaking specifically of people in their 20s and 30s.
Right.
Like I don't know where they get their information from. They seem to just get it like some sort of remote telepathic feed that goes straight into their brain or something.
Yeah. You know? So. It happens all the time.
You've seen all the TV shows and movies where they have the telepathic implant. Well, they're just given at birth now.
So, there've been a lot of great films this month at the Portland Black Film Festival. Some great ones coming up this week, mm-hmm. including one that was sort of like a coming of age for me. Tell us what's coming up this week and what time they are showing.
Okay, well, what's coming up this week? On Wednesday, we have at 7:30, Wednesday the 21st, 7:30, the spotlight on Elijah Hassan, who's mm-hmm. a local filmmaker, one of my dearest friends. I mean, really, when you say, you know, my brother from another mother, this is Elijah and I, and I think he's one of the most talented filmmakers, not just in Portland, but in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And I love watching his films, and I love showing his films to others. So we have a showcase of just his stuff coming up, and that's on Wednesday, the 21st. On Thursday, we have the documentary Charles Bradley, Soul of America, and that's in conjunction with Mississippi Records, is co-presenting that with us. And that's a documentary about the soul singer Charles Bradley, who...
Yes.
You know, I don't want to tell the story because the story will give away the documentary, but it's a fascinating story. Yeah. He was a fascinating man, and I think people will really love that. On Saturday, the 24th, is sort of our tentpole event of the festival, which is we're showing director John Sayles' movie Brother from Another Planet.
Yes.
And that's going to be, aside from the fact, and this is more for the film nerds out there, yeah. right? But we're showing that in 35mm, and in this day and age, most films are projected digitally. Uh-huh. This is a 35mm print, and Joe Morton, who is the star of that film, will be in town for the screening, and I will be doing my best to have an intelligent conversation with him after the film is over. So,
you know, Cecil and I are going to just go ahead and just have a moment of silence for all of the black geeks and nerds and sci-fi freaks that saw that movie when it first came out and were profoundly changed and really think of it more as the Joe Morton movie than the John Sayles movie.
Indeed. You know, I'm with you on that. I saw that movie. I didn't see it in the theaters, but it was on HBO all the time.
On the theaters when it first came out, yeah. Dude. I'm that geeky.
Yeah. And I love that movie so much. And like you, I think of it as the Joe Morton show. Mm-hmm. And I think John Sayles is an amazing director and managed and writer, because he wrote it as well. Managed to create, you know, here's a sci-fi movie about an alien from another planet who looks like a black man, but he's an alien, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't know. But that there's so much universal truth in this sci-fi movie. It's such a beautiful film. And several years ago, it was screening up in Seattle, and Joe Morton was supposed to be there. It was screening for a festival up there, the Langston Hughes Festival of African American Film. And they asked me to come up and interview him there, and I was like, yep, I'm there. Hopped in the car, drove up there, and then it was like, oh, something happened last minute, he can't be here. And I was like, no! So this event is in response to me always having wanted to talk to Joe Morton ever since I was a kid. You know, this movie came out, I think, 82 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. 84.
Having just... 84, okay. Just haven't been a big, huge fan of his and this film, so I'm really excited about that. And then continuing on with the program on Sunday the 25th, I should go back really quick. Brother from Another Planet is Saturday night at 7, and I would encourage people to get their tickets in advance online, because events like this tend to sell out, and you don't want to miss out. Because I will be at my nerdiest.
All right. Saturday
night, so. Sweet.
Sunday the 25th at 8 p.m. we're doing the local showcase, and that is all local filmmakers. Mm-hmm. And this was interesting, because this sort of speaks to how out of touch I feel like I have become. I knew there was a handful of young black filmmakers out there doing different things, but I wasn't sure if there was enough to fill a program of just local filmmakers. Mm. And it turns out there is. Mm. And so I'm really excited with what we have. We've got a film by, it was directed by Jerry Bell Jr., called Angela's Sacred Heart, but it's based on a story by Ashley Williams and her mother. So it's that's sort of, I guess we could say, well, that's one of the bigger of the shorts, because that one's a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. Everything else is a little bit shorter, but we've got stuff by a whole slew of filmmakers, some of whom I've never even met in person. I reached out to a young woman named Annalise, goes by the name of Annalise Cleopatra. She did a short that I'd seen and asked her if she could connect me with some people. So she has, and a fair amount of music videos. It's almost like a music video program more than anything else, until we get towards the tail end, when we get to like Angela's Sacred Heart and a couple other things. But I'm just excited for that, because it means there was a time when it felt like if you said black filmmaker in Portland, you were talking about one of five people. Yes. There wasn't that many of us here. And certainly there wasn't the connectedness that I see some of these younger filmmakers having. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited, really excited about that. And then I think we have, I know that there, and it's interesting because there's a couple things that are showing that aren't part of our program, but it's, still a great time to show it. And Black Power Mixtape is on Monday the 26th.
Oh.
And that's a documentary about the Black Power movement. And then the last part of our festival is, they're calling it Rap City 2. And that's part of a regular program that they do anyway called Rerun Cinema, which is, so it's just going to be all classic hip hop music videos. The guy who puts it together, his name is Nick. I never know what he's going to show.
Okay.
I just know that I end up feeling like I'm about 13 years old again, because it brings me back. It's a lot of early 80s up to the early 90s hip hop, and you just like, you lose your mind, because you're like, oh, I forgot about this song. I love this group, So, that's the remainder of the program, but it's a great program, and I'm just excited that two of the shows that we're having are built around local talent, and I've always been committed to helping cultivate the local art scene, especially as it relates to film, but as we as a community try to find our voice in the city more and more, it seems like it's become increasingly difficult because of just the displacement that's happened through gentrification and urban renewal. And so I see a younger generation that's rising up, and now part of what I'm trying to do is make sure that they know, how they fit into the legacy of this city, how they fit into the legacy of film, and that they know about the people who came before them, and not just black filmmakers, but just filmmakers in general, because at the end of the day, if you're a filmmaker, you're a filmmaker.
That's true.
It's disappointing to me that we still use labels that we should only be using by choice, but we still feel like a lot of times it feels like we're using them out of necessity, and that frustrates me.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland. 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in Points East along the Columbia River Gorge. And if you are in Points South, like the Willamette River Valley, or let's see, what's someplace else that's down there? Oh, I don't know. How about Philomath? Or we might be even making it down to Eugene. It's 103.4. Did I say that backwards?
104.3.
Dyslexia. Darn you. But everywhere else is KBOO.FM. We're speaking today with, I don't know what I should call you besides just saying, well, we have David Walker on the phone, film impresario, media auteur, homeboy with a broad vision. I don't know what.
I'm just me.
All right. Okay. So he's one of us. He's me.
And if you want to talk with him about his adventures in bringing all of his story, our story, other people's story, not only to print but to film, give us a call, 503-231-8187. Just because we're having fun here don't mean you can't join in the conversation, too.
David, you mentioned earlier, just before Celeste gave the station info, about what I would think is your sense of, for lack of a better term, calling now in terms of passing on the legacy. Who, perhaps for those who have reached a certain point in their lives and they look back, begin to ask, what was it all about and what can I do? Are there ways in which you can talk about your journey, who led you to where you are today, and your calling in terms of reaching out towards a newer generation in terms of passing on the legacy?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. And a lot of that comes from, as we mentioned earlier, I was just down in L.A. last week. I just got back early this morning. I spent most of the time with my cousin. And, you know, we grew up together on the East Coast. We grew up in Connecticut, right outside New York City, and spent a lot of time with our grandparents. And our grandparents were really big on history. And making sure that we knew who was who in the family and who did what, and the participation and the involvement in the community that other people had, you know. So and it was interesting because we were talking about how we don't know what happened to the family photo albums. They've all sort of disappeared. But like our grandparents were very active in both the NAACP and the Urban League, so we were raised in that type of environment. And one of the things that we were talking about was we didn't realize at the time how important some of the people culturally that our grandparents knew were, you know. And so there'd be pictures of like my grandfather and Harry Belafonte.
Yes.
At the house,
yes,
at my grandparents' house, you know, and it wasn't like my grandparents were rich by any stretch of the imagination, because they weren't. They were very blue collar, working class, but they were also very politically active. You know, my grandfather happened to know Harry Belafonte from their days in the Navy together, and so we were sort of raised with in that environment, you know. And I tell people, when you're a black kid growing up in the 70s, you've always got, you know, there's always a subscription to Ebony and Jet magazine, and so you're always picking those up and flipping through those and wondering what's going on. And then you go with your grandmother or your aunties or someone, you're at the beauty parlor.
Yes.
So again, Ebony and Jet and Ebony Junior are there. And you're flipping through those magazines, and you're hearing the conversations at the barbershop and the beauty parlor. And that was all the stuff that adults talked about when I was a kid, just fascinated me. You know, I knew it was stuff that I wasn't, maybe some of it I was probably wasn't even supposed to know about, you know.
Right.
That just made me want to know about it even more. and so that sort of informed me. And then as I got older, you know, and when I say older, I'm talking into my early to mid 20s, and the home video revolution was going on. I realized that there was all these things that I remembered from my childhood that I wasn't seeming to see anywhere. You know, there was movies that, you know, back then they would do ads on the radio for a movie.
Right.
There'd be a commercial on TV, whatever, or I'd see something in Ebony or Jet magazine. And there was all these things that I remembered from my childhood, but they didn't seem to be there anymore. And, you know, there was movies that I remember seeing as a kid that I could find at a video store, but then there were other movies that I wanted to see as a kid, but, you know, like, no one in their right mind was going to take me, you know, to see Shaft's Big Score when I was, you know, like 8 years old or whatever.
And you couldn't even sneak in then because, you know, they just wouldn't sell you a ticket if you were a kid and it was rated, you know?
Because most of the time, theaters only had one screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a handful of theaters back in those days that maybe had two or three screens. But yeah, sneaking in was really difficult. Not that I advocate sneaking into the movies. I don't want to sound like an irresponsible adult. But I will say this. The moment I was able to get away with sneaking in, I did it.
We're not going to let you suffer that alone. Okay, I snuck into a movie once or twice, too. Okay, you don't have to be alone on that.
I appreciate that. But, so that was really a huge part of, how my grandparents raised both myself and my cousins. And just also that curiosity, which I still have. My grandparents, I remember they had two sets of the encyclopedia. Mm-hmm. And I would sort of sit there and flip through it.
Yes.
And even then, you know, these were, you know, older versions of the encyclopedia, which for those young people that are listening that have no idea what I'm talking about, the encyclopedia was kind of like, that was what the internet was before there was the internet. And it was a whole bunch of books and you would have to flip through them and, you know, maybe you got a new edition of the encyclopedia every few years, but
maybe.
But I was just so I was always curious about stuff like that then, and I'm still curious about this, you know, stuff now. Curious about history, curious about the lives that people have led, and the thing that I in my not just my belief, I've seen it. There's so much of history that isn't properly recorded. And runs the risk of being forgotten, and you know, so to me, it's really important to try to share that with other people, and that's been one of the main missions of the Portland Black Film Festival. We show a lot of older films. You know, earlier this month we showed the 1943 film Stormy Weather.
Yeah.
With,
oh, that's a great movie. Lena Horne and...
Lena Horne and Bill Robinson and the Nicholas Brothers.
Yes.
And Cab Calloway. And we had a good-sized crowd in the audience, you know, and the age range, it skewed a little bit older, but there was a decent representation of an age range. And I asked the audience, I said, how many of you have actually seen this movie before? Mm-hmm. And most of them had never seen it.
Wow.
And then I said, you know, and then I said, well, I'm going to give you a little history lesson, which I tend to do before a lot of screenings, and I was explaining to them the history of what we call of what was called back then race films and black cast films, the difference between the two, explaining to them who, you know, Oscar Micheaux was,
mm-hmm.
Who Spencer Williams was, who Noble Williams was, and that Stormy Weather was actually an offshoot of the black produced and financed films, the race films of the day. When Hollywood started to figure out that there was money there,
yes,
they started making the black cast films, and you know, of which Stormy Weather really is probably, if not one of the best, maybe even the best. You know, I love that movie, and the Nicholas Brothers at the end, you know, and it's just kind of funny. Even as I'm saying it, it's like the Nicholas Brothers were done with their careers by the time I was a kid, but I still knew who they were, right?
Yeah, yes.
And you know, and I just sometimes sit back and just will watch, you know, watch them on YouTube, and I told the audience, you know, earlier this month, I was like, yeah, you got to see, you know, stick around, watch this whole movie, but when you get to this dance number, realize you might be watching one of the greatest things ever committed to film, and I still believe that firmly, so...
Right. Yeah, it reminds me so much, especially when you were talking about your grandparents and picking up on the memories and the conversations. And I suppose maybe as we get older, we learn to regret those conversations or those things we did not, you know, pay attention to. I remember my Uncle Ben talk about his friend Langston. I didn't know what mm-hmm. that was all about. And
remember the story you told me? You were sharing it with one time I was with you and your mom about who used to change your nappies for you.
That's right.
You got to say it.
Oh, Billie Holiday.
Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I think I embarrassed him. I'm sorry.
So now for everyone to be embarrassed.
Well, I don't think I could be embarrassed if Billie Holiday was changing my nappy for me as a youngster. I would be like, you know, kind of puffed up just a little bit. Okay. Just a little bit, you know.
We're talking with David Walker, curator of the Portland Black Film Festival that is running through this week, the end of the month at the Hollywood Theater. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And let's go to our caller, Sean. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Walker. I was wondering, are you familiar with a movie called Burn? I tried to find it on DVD a couple years ago, and I don't know if it's on Blu-ray or what, but... it starred Marlon Brando, and I just was really curious to get your take on it. It seems like it'd be a really appropriate movie for our times, and I'd be interested in your thoughts. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Burn was, if I remember correctly, it was directed by Gillo Pontecorvo, who also directed Battle of Algiers. I could be wrong, because it's early for me right now. I haven't got a lot of sleep. But, yeah, that's a very politically charged movie from the 1960s, and I'm sure that... You know, that's sort of the interesting thing, because I know it was on video at one point, but there's not that many video stores left, right? So how do you find a movie like Burn? You know, they may have it at Movie Madness here in Portland, or
it's available on Amazon. That's the only thing I know about. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, that is a. In fact, I should just look to see, because now I'm curious if I have the director right, because it'll drive me. I'll go insane otherwise.
Who did you say? Did you say Pontecorvo?
Yeah, Pontecorvo.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh wow! See, I'm not that tired that I couldn't remember.
Right. I did it through the magic of the internet, people. So it wasn't like I knew.
Mean you weren't like David and had to go pick up the volumes of the World Book Encyclopedia? And
well, my volumes of the World Book Encyclopedia were dog-eared on different pages.
Okay.
And that movie hadn't been made when we had ours, because was I in high school yet? Oh, I was in high school.
Okay.
Then, so. And I would not have, would I have been old enough to see this movie? Probably. It depends.
Yeah.
You know, it depends.
It's, well, it's interesting, because Burn is, that's an Italian movie, and Pontecorvo and Franco Salinas, who was one of the writers of it. Most of these cats were like, you know, for lack of a better term, and I want to be very careful how I use this term. They were, a lot of them were either communists or anarchists.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they had been really disillusioned by Italy's involvement with the war during the 30s and 40s. And so you saw this emergence of really politically charged film. Burn is a great one, as is Battle of Algiers. And there's another one, the title, it has a really bad title, and that's not the original title, called Black Jesus. And that starred Woody Strode.
That sounds familiar, because I remember watching a lot of the Woody Strode movies, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was directed by Valerio Zerlini. And that was also a very anti-colonialism film that looked at Europe's role in the exploitation of the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very, very loosely based on Patrice Lumumba.
Yes.
And that's a movie, as we're talking about it, man, that's a movie.
Lumumba, goodness. I saw that at a film festival in D.C. when I was still on the board of the cable access station. Yeah. We went there to procure some films and to go to a some type of congressional hearing. I don't know what it was, but that's a powerful film. And it's funny you should mention it, because I was just talking to some friends about it the other day and wondering if I could get somebody to bring that film, because I think in today's political arena, it's really important the young people understand the lengths that occupying powers would go through to shut down any type of revolt or political awareness, just political awareness, let alone revolt.
And let's be honest, they're still doing it. You know, they're still doing it.
Well, yeah, that's one reason why I think folks need to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a great film too. That was directed by Raoul Peck, who his film last year came out was the film about James Baldwin, I Am Not Your Negro, which was also an amazing film, and we were fortunate enough to show that at the festival last year.
Yes.
And you know, and again, this speaks to my childhood. You know, like my mom's favorite writer when I was a kid, one of her favorite writers was James Baldwin. So I knew who James Baldwin was probably before I could even read. You know, there were James Baldwin books on my grandparents' bookshelves, you know, the shelf just underneath the encyclopedias, or maybe it was the ones above. And so, you know, I was that kid who, when I got older, and it was like, hey, you know, what were some of those books on my grandparents' shelf? And going back and trying to rediscover them, just like I went back and listening to the music that they listened to, because I was fascinated by that, you know. And I think that there's a lot of young people don't have any interest in whatever their parents or their grandparents were into, but I guess I just was like, yo, my grandparents were cool, you know, my mom was cool. I want to know how they got that way, you know. Uh-huh. What was it they were listening to, and what were they? What films were they watching? What books did they read? And but conversely, a lot of older folks, you know, don't like to talk about this stuff. And the thing I have to face now is that I guess technically I'm an elder at this point, right? I mean, yes. I've been around long enough. I know enough in terms of what I've just experienced, you know, people ask me questions and I suddenly feel like the old man in the room, you know.
Right.
I think it's a beautiful thing when you have the answers to those questions, and it's even more of a beautiful thing when you don't have the answers, but you're like, okay, well, let's see if we can find out. Let's look this up together, you know. I keep coming back to what a weird kid I was, you know. I would go to the library and ask the librarians a question, and you know, they would help me find the books, and I still was doing that. I still do that to this day. I go to the library and I'm like, hey, I'm looking for something, but I don't know what I'm looking for. Librarians are like magical people, you
yes.
know, like they all get their training at Hogwarts or something like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I have the utmost.
Don't tell all the secrets. No, by all means, folks, read a book.
Yeah.
So it's 8:46. I don't know how much longer we're going to get you. I'm going to see if we can sneak you up the whole rest of the time. But what happens after the film festival? What would you like to suggest people do? Because what I hear you talking about is not only the necessity of keeping the future peopled by the past, but also finding ways to communicate about what we're doing in terms of helping the future be the future.
You know, that's such a good question, and I struggle with this, and I labor with this, because I see people all the time. You know, they're on social media, they're on, you know, they're you'll see two people at a coffee shop sitting across from each other. Clearly, they're together, but they're
yes.
not even engaging with each other. They're
right.
they're on their phones, you know, and I've been guilty of that too. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I can't even remember the last time I had a conversation with somebody. I was thinking about that at the airport last night. I was like, I can't remember the last time I really had a conversation with someone at the airport, because people don't really talk to each other that much at airports or on planes anymore, you know,
mm-hmm.
because they're able to immerse themselves in their own world.
Yeah.
And I would just like to see people... Well, one thing I'd definitely love to see is I'd love to see people sharing the things they love a little bit more than they share the things they hate online, right?
Amen.
There's a lot of there's a lot of hate out there, and not necessarily as much love, and sharing recommendations, you know, with whether it's about film or music or you know, when I hang out with any of my friends with kids, I talk to the kids, you know, hey, what's the last good book you've read? What kind of music are you listening to today? Because most of the time, I don't know what that music is, you know. Yes. I haven't heard anything. I haven't listened to anything since, you know, anything new since about 1978. So, but I think that there's so many opportunities, you know, for people to just share what they have in terms of the things that they're interested in, the music, but also going out and looking for, actively looking for stuff that's not the norm, you know. I mean, I went and saw Black Panther over the weekend, saw it with my cousin. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, it was like being kids all over again. And we talked about it and you know, and we built it up and shared it with our friends.
Did you talk in the movie?
Oh no, we were like two little 10-year-olds just transfixed.
Oh, okay. So it was the good not talking the movie, as opposed to, because the reason I ask is not to be rude, but that's part of the movie experience, is sharing your reaction to whatever it is before you, or, you know, sometimes something will happen and you have one of those profound thoughts that needs to be shared right there in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, don't go in that room. You know, the killer's in that room. Yeah, no, they...
Oh,
they
yeah. Just,
right.
I think it was a amazingly... that we saw it in, down in L.A., and I was amazed at how quiet... We were actually talking about that afterwards, because we would go to the movies as kids, and, you know, we would go... What we still call it that, you know, we go to the Black Theater.
Oh, yeah.
We as a people can be very vocal during the film.
Indeed.
But it was, we were both like, yo, that was a really quiet audience.
Wow.
And we were just like, I think that, I mean, we came out here, the people were, kids were dancing, mm-hmm. and, you know, adults were crying, and it was really, you begin to realize the power of what I call the power of make-believe,
mm-hmm. right.
and the power of dreaming, mm-hmm. and just imagining yourself in otherworldly situations. And, you know, both of you were talking about the power that Brother from Another Planet had on you, which it had on me too. You know, I like I said, I didn't see it in the theaters, but I saw it on cable, and that profoundly moved me. That movie did, and like Black Panther is now doing that to a whole new generation,
mm-hmm. cool.
and I'm hoping that generation will then be encouraged to create their own stories, get their own stuff out there, and,
whether it be movies or comic books or whatever.
Yeah, movies, comic books, and maybe you're not moved to become a filmmaker or comic book writer, but you could. We definitely need some critical thinkers right now. Like,
hello,
that's like an endangered species in this country. Is the critical thinker, and then the advocate. You know, mm-hmm. I tell people when I was a working as a film critic, I was a consumer advocate as much as I was anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to warn people, you know, and don't give your money to this garbage, or oh yeah, go see this, go support this, these artists, go support this film. That's a sort of, I think that there's we have an unprecedented opportunities to build community in this day and age, and yet we're more disjointed and more disconnected than ever before. It's amazing how we have all the tools to be connected, and we are connected, but then in our own way, we're not connected, we're disconnected. And I'd like to see more connection. And again, you don't need to tell me what you hate. I have an idea of what everybody hates. I get bombarded with it every day. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you like. Tell me, you know, talk to me about a book that you read that was really profound, or share with me some music. You know, that I have some people I follow on social media who I listen to the music that they post, mm-hmm. and it's like, how did I not know this? You know, this is from my childhood. How come I never heard of this band or this musician? I just love that. I love that sense of discovery, and I don't understand. I really don't understand people who don't have a sense of discovery and a sense of wonder of what's new. I get why you might get the same flavor of ice cream every time you go to get ice cream, you know. Mm. But when it comes to other things, like there's so much, even with ice cream, there's a lot of beautiful stuff to be discovered out there.
Okay, so now the question is, a book, a comic book, a song, a movie. You got to leave us a suggestion from each of those categories.
Oh boy, okay.
Any book, any movie, any song, any comic book, or you could even mention your own stuff too.
If I mention,
you got to share.
Stuff, that'll just be wrong.
No, it wouldn't. We're talking to you.
I am reading as we speak. I'm reading a book called Stamped from the Beginning. And it came out, I believe it came out last year. I could be wrong. It might have been 2016. Mm-hmm. It is one of the most infuriating and eye-opening books I've ever read in my life. And it is, I'm looking up the author right now. It's Ibram X. Kendi, Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. As someone who loves history and has read innumerable books, this is, every page is an eye opener. It's a dense read. It's very at times is very depressing, because it really gets into how when Kendi talks about the definitive history of racist ideas in America, he's very specifically talking about as it relates to people of African descent. Mm-hmm. And you begin to, it's one of the most intense readings I've had on the history of slavery, the history of racism. But I would definitely say, you know, check out Stamped from the Beginning. To go to film, I'm not going to go with film, but I'm going to go with TV, because I keep rewatching. I can't stop watching Atlanta. Yes. Donald Glover's show, and I know that the second season, which is called, I think it's called Robin Season, Atlanta Robin Season, is getting ready to drop, and I'm like, yo, my cousin and I we're talking about that, just sort of blown away by that, and I was just, I keep going back to it, because it's like, to me, like, we've come a long way since Good Times, you know. Wow. which was a show that I was not particularly fond of as a child. Mm-hmm. But so I love Atlanta. So there's Stamped from the Beginning. A song, there's an artist who I just recently was introduced to, who is, I believe he is out of Philly, but I could be wrong, in the 70s, a cat named Nolan Porter. And one of his big hits was a song called Keep On Keeping On, not to be confused with the Curtis Mayfield song of the same title. I've been listening to a lot of Nolan Porter, but that particular song, and I can't remember the name of the album that it's on. Yeah. But in times of crisis, or where it just seems like, man, the world is just falling apart, I don't know how I'm going to make it through today, I'll just put that song on repeat, and that gets me through. And to me, that's also a great example of, and that's a song from when I was a kid, but I never even heard it till I was, you know, well into my 40s. So that's a song, that's a book, that's a film. What else was there? Was there anything else I needed to bring to the mix?
If you had a comic book, that would be great, but this is really great.
I would like a comic book. Give me one.
You would like a comic? Yeah. Okay, this will be... it's very self-promoting. I would say pick up, I wrote two Shaft graphic novels, and when I say Shaft, I do mean, yes, John Shaft, the black private detective.
Shut your mouth. Exactly. But you're talking about Shaft.
So I wrote two of those. The publisher is Dynamite.
How appropriate.
So that's me being self-serving.
But I'm
still actually quite happy with the work that I did on both those books. I also wrote an actual Shaft novel. I worked with the estate of Ernest Tidyman, who was the writer who created.
Oh yeah.
Created the character and wrote seven novels, and that had been. And you talk about being a weird kid. You know, the moment I found out that there were Shaft books, I wanted to write Shaft books.
Oh, dude! You know what? I had a flashback of David. Coffin Ed and Gravedigger Jones.
Oh, yes.
I had a flashback the moment you said that. Wow.
Yes.
I'm not going to explain what that is. Anybody, look it up and you'll enjoy it. Well, you know what? We all need to get together and do some brainstorming about what we can all bring to a mix, because you have reinvigorated me. I'm just so thankful that you gave us your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
And you've been listening to More Talk Radio. Coming up at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour. It burrows down to the roots of the great issues of the day. At 10 is Locus Focus. Barbara Bernstein talks to Hanford Challenge and Columbia Riverkeepers about the latest contamination incidents at Hanford. At 11, Making Contact study law enforcement history as a tool of social control. Hey, don't forget, KBOO Kickstarter is live.
Live.
So go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter and help KBOO build a city of media makers.
And after you donate, put it on your social media pages or hashtags and send it out to everyone so they know about your community connection. KBOO Portland.
No classrooms, no teachers, no students at KBOO. Only community members sharing their skills with one another and passing on what they've learned from another DJ to the next generation of programmers. We believe that all have something to teach and we all have something to learn. Knowledge should be free to access. Your support for KBOO ensures this. Help us build a city of artistic media makers. Long live DIY Radio and join us on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station.